The headlines: Palestinians hail as a victory UN resolution calling for the International Court of Justice's opinion on Israel's occupation of their land. The Iranian army holds the second day of large-scale military maneuvers aimed at boosting deterrence and combat readiness. And people in Australia and New Zealand welcome the event of the year 2023. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The UN General Assembly has adopted a resolution calling on the International Court of Justice to comment on Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories. The resolution seeks an advisory opinion on the legal consequences of Israel's occupation, settlement activity, and the annexation of Palestinian territories. It also seeks opinion on Tel Aviv's measures aimed at changing the demographic composition and the status of Al-Quds. The US, Canada, Germany, and Britain were among Western states that voted against the UN resolution. Russia and China voted in favor. The Palestinian ambassador to the UN has hailed the countries backing the resolution for standing up against Israel.
This vote and request comes one day after the new Israeli government was formed, pledging to accelerate colonial and racist policies against the Palestinian people. We trust that regardless of your vote today, if you believe in international law and peace, you will uphold the opinion of the International Court of Justice when delivered, and you will stand up to this Israeli government right now, because freedom, justice, and peace shall prevail.
Some of the Palestinian officials have also lauded the UN resolution. Spokesman for President Mahmoud Abbas says it is time for the Israeli regime to be held accountable for its crimes against Palestinians. This is while Hamas resistance movement says the new resolution could just be added to a long list of UN anti-Israel resolutions that won't bother the regime. Hamas says such UN resolutions on Israel will remain on paper as long as the U.S. backs the regime. The ICJ last weighed in on the Palestine cause in 2004, ruling that an Israeli separation barrier was illegal. Tel Aviv rejected that ruling, accusing the court of being politically motivated. From Occupied Ramallah, Mona Kandil joins us right now to tell us more. At this point, we've had reactions, obviously, from this, in the form of statements, not reactions, I should say, such as Riyad Mansour. But tell us exactly how Palestinians are feeling about this, if you've had a chance to talk to them. Because, really, as I just mentioned in our news, this is just good on paper, at least from what we see from this angle.
Well, as Hamas movement has said, as long as the United States would be supporting Israel and would be acting as a partner to the Israeli occupation and ensuring full coverage, let's say, and covering its crimes on the Palestinians, then all the decisions and the outcomes that will come will be only ink on paper. The Palestinians have witnessed numerous agreements and such decisions and previously, but nothing has changed. Israel continued to practice more aggression on the Palestinians, more violations, confiscation of lands, expansion of settlements, giving a green light to build no settlements, also here in the occupied West Bank and in Al-Quds, and the crimes continued to be carried out, whether in the Gaza Strip or in the occupied territories. So it's clear, according to Hamas movement and let's say to other Palestinian powers and Palestinian factions and even the Palestinian Authority, at the end of the day, Israel knows very well that nobody would be forcing it to stop its crimes or even translating the decisions into practices on ground, and even no forms of sanctions would be imposed on the Israeli regime. And now we are speaking about Israeli a prime minister who came to power, Benjamin Netanyahu, and he succeeded to form the new cabinet. It includes a number of Israeli settler officials that they are well known for their hatred of the Palestinians, of course, and their only dream is to have the big Israeli state from the river to the river. They consider the Israeli settlements that are built in the occupied territories, in the occupied West Bank, as their own lands, as they consider it as Tel Aviv and the lands occupied in 1948. And thus, they will not allow the Palestinians to have a Palestinian state in the future with at least East Al-Quds as their capital, the lands that should be declared on the lands occupied in 1967.
Thank you very much for that, Mona Kandil, a correspondent there from occupied Ramallah. Thank you. On to news from Iraq, where Iraq's top parliamentarian, Hadi Al-Amari, says that the rise of the dollar in the country is Washington's plan to control the economy. The head of the Fatah Alliance in Iraq's parliament holds the U.S. responsible for the rise in the dollar's value. Al-Amari warned that Iraq is facing another battle that is no less important than the war on Daesh. Calling it a soft war, the top MP added that Baghdad should move to become economically independent. Al-Amari concluded that accomplishing such independence will be the best revenge for the assassination of commanders Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The Iranian army holds the second day of its large-scale military exercises in the south of the country. Different units of the army are involved in the maneuvers. The spokesman of the drills, Brigadier General Ali Reza Sheikh, said that the exercises serve as a deterrence and represent the army's self-reliance. Here are more comments from the spokesman.
Play a deterrent role, and you see different drones being used, a combination of different types of missiles, long-range, short-range missiles, and also the existence of various defensive systems. The motto of Zulfaqar 1401 drills is self-reliance, power, and sustainable security. Sustainable security will be maintained through power and self-reliance. If there is, in the absence of self-reliance, such modern hardware and equipment, and even the old hardware and equipment, how can they operate? In fact, we have managed to renovate all parts of such equipment. The old equipment have been overhauled and have turned into modern equipment. Therefore, the spirit of self-reliance amongst our forces have made it possible for us to make use of domestically manufactured equipment to defend the country. And we have reached this point of self-reliance in order to apply such equipment. Another important point is the defensive knowledge that has been institutionalized inside the country. And such a knowledge can contribute to the production of new equipment in proportion with our needs.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized forum on the role of the late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, in combat terrorism. During this meeting, dubbed the Specialized Forum on Fighting Terrorism and Extremism in the West Asia region, guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies discussed the fight on terror from different perspectives. Mahdi Abbasian has more.
The Center for Political and International Studies of the Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized roundtable focusing on the fight against terrorism and extremism in the West Asia region. Guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies took part in the forum, which concentrated on efforts made by the Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Among the most significant topics discussed during the meeting were fighting terrorism in the West Asia region from the point of view of international law, the role of General Soleimani in fighting terrorism in the West Asia region, and the role of the United Nations in fight on terror in the West Asia region. On the sidelines of the meeting, Iran's former ambassador to Iraq, Iraj Masjidi, highlighted the late commander's role in neutralizing terrorist groups in neighboring countries.
When Lieutenant General Soleimani was assassinated, I was working as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Iraq. He would frequently travel to Iraq in order to confront the ISIS terrorist group and help the Iraqi armed forces and Hashd al-Sha'bi with planning and logistic support. In other words, he played a prominent role in Iraq in the fight against terrorists.
Masjidi also said that efforts to bring a prosecution against those involved in the assassination of General Soleimani continues. In this regard, the head of a special Iranian committee tasked with pursuing the case of General Soleimani's assassination in domestic and international courts said an indictment on the assassination will be announced soon.
The UN report that described the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as unlawful and arbitrary has made prosecution of this crime easier for us. It clearly holds the U.S. accountable for committing this crime and violating international law. The Foreign Ministry and the Ministry of Justice have also made efforts based on the 1973 Convention, and the results will be announced soon.
He was referring to a report by a UN expert on extrajudicial killings concluding that the targeting of General Soleimani and those accompanying him constitute an arbitrary killing for which the U.S. is responsible.
Iran has had a significant role in the fight against terrorism in the West Asia region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. And Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, played a pivotal role in combating terrorism and defeating Daesh. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Millions across the world are celebrating the arrival of 2023 by fireworks and other festivities. Firework displays took place at the iconic Sky Tower in New Zealand's largest city of Auckland. Also in Australia, more than 7,000 fireworks were launched from the top of the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Another 2,000 were fired from the nearby Opera House, along with musical celebrations. The two Koreas have also rung in the new year. India is up next to usher in 2023 soon. Samoa, a small Pacific island, was the first country to say goodbye to 2022 and enter the new year. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Venezuela's opposition groups have voted to disband their so-called interim government led by Juan Guaido and backed by the United States. Three of the four major opposition groups backed removing Guaido during the Friday voting. They have said in a joint statement that the so-called interim government is no longer useful. Guaido has denounced the vote as a jump into a vacuum. The vote is a blow to the U.S. as well. That's because Washington backed Guaido when he declared himself president of Venezuela almost 4 years ago. The U.S. also tried to rally international support for Guaido. He declared himself president following elections that saw the incumbent Nicolas Maduro get reelected. Guaido had blamed Maduro's government for the economic problems of Venezuela. Caracas blames them on U.S. sanctions. Arnold August is an author and journalist joining us from Montreal. Bruno Biclini is an academic and political analyst who joins us from Porto Alegre. Welcome to you both. Arnold August, first to you. When you take a look at the efforts that the U.S. put behind this, going back years at this point, we can't discount the impact that this had on Venezuela in terms of throwing it into not only political chaos, but through the use of U.S. sanctions, the suffering that Venezuelans had to experience because of this. I mean, this is not something you can just sweep under the rug, is it?
No, it's very open and public, and it's a pleasure to be once again with you, Kaveh. And I would like to say you're right. It's been 4 years. In January next month, it'll be 4 years since the United States and its main allies, the European Union, Canada, etc., have been hammering their way that the real representative of Venezuela, the interim president, as they call him, is Juan Guaido. And you're right. It's a major change. It has been building up over the last few months, with countries, including the European Union, backing away from supporting Guaido. But the announcement yesterday is earth-shaking. And if one looks at the reaction by Juan Guaido, it's desperate. I mean, he himself, according to the reports in Reuters, he himself recognizes that he has been, his post has been removed. But at the same time, he says we cannot leave a vacuum. They should have at least. You cannot just remove someone like me, a constitutional president, he said, but there should be some alternative, etc. So he is very desperate to try to hang on to what he had before, but it's a major change. It's all over. I mean, it was interesting, like even the United States, there was a Reuters had a full article on that event yesterday, and they reached out to the United Nations, U.S. National Security Council last Friday, and their very one-sentence response is the following. The U.S. will continue to support the opposition, the assembly, and the interim government, and this is what is important, regardless of what form it takes. In other words, if they take out Guaido, that's okay, put someone in, we will support it. So even the United States has come to the conclusion that they have no choice but to dump Juan Guaido. It is earth-shaking as far as Venezuelan politics, I would even say Latin America, and it has international repercussions as well.
You know, we can go at it in different angles here, Bruno, when we take a look at what has happened. I'm wondering what you think when you see in your capacity as an academic and political analyst, when you take a look at the way that the U.S. goes about these color revolutions, goes about giving wings to personality and work its way through different avenues in a country in order to reach its political objectives, and even spend a lot of money at it, but then when it sees that it's of no use, dumps this, I'm going to use the word Arnold Augusta used, dumps this personality to the side. I mean, what does that say about the U.S. in terms of its planning and in terms of its approach?
Well, things are very different now from 4 years ago. For example, Juan Guaido was self-imposed as the interim government of Venezuela and had the support of the Trump administration because they stole Citgo, a subsidiary of PDVSA, inside the U.S. countries. And the British government, they stole the Venezuela gold was in deposit in British banks. So with this kind of money, with this kind of resources and amounts, Guaido disposed himself to sell PDVSA for the international capital and break the ties, for example, between Venezuela, Iran, and Russia. Now it's impossible for the U.S. diplomacy to support Guaido, and it's impossible for them not recognizing that the efforts, some efforts because of the energy crisis, like the efforts being done by the by Norway diplomatics inside Ciudad de Mexico, that they are doing long talks with kinds sector of the opposition, led by the oligarchic party Acción Democrática, which was the major party of the last political system, which was thrown down by the Chavismo. So they have to throw down Guaido. They have to put Guaido in the garbage and try to figure out new ways to establish at least an opposition who commit themselves to respect democracy and not sell out PDVSA and the natural resources of Venezuela. They do this all the time. They use allies and then they throw them in the garbage. For example, they try to put in prison Alberto Fujimori, which was an operator for them, with the CIA agent Vladimir Montesinos. They throw down everyone who is not more useful for them.
Thank you very much for that. Bruno Bellini there, academic and political analyst from Porto Alegre. And Arnold August, thank you, from Montreal, author and journalist. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Part 3.
He was born in a village in the heart of the desert. At the age of 5, he became a shepherd in the village. A young shepherd who grazed sheep with his bare feet and at night his mother would remove the thorns off his hands and feet with a needle. During the entire fall and winter, he worked hard and his hands were frostbitten due to severe cold. Every time the teacher hit him on the back of his hands with a piece of wet branch from pomegranate tree, and he would start crying out loud, his father would shout from the yard in his house, "Don't hit him. Have a little fairness. Qasem's hands are not dirty. His skin has become black." And as far as he could remember, he was always waiting for the spring to come to bring warmth with it. Even though his hands never fired a bullet, they prevented many hands from shedding the blood of innocent people. And after he fell, people in the world didn't shake hands warmly for a long time. A man with a bright future, with a stature to stand tall. Only a few people around Qasem knew the reason behind his sneezing and coughing. They were the effects of the chemical wounds he sustained during the Iraq-Iran war and intensified during the battle for the liberation of Aleppo. Hossein Purjafari, the officer accompanying Qasem, was one of those few people around him. He was a constant companion of Qasem since the war and knew very well that the hard part of the chemical complications for Qasem was not the coughing, but the painful blisters that covered his feet from time to time. The hiding of Daesh among the people made it difficult to clean up the houses in Bu Kemal. It was just as difficult to clean up other cities in Syria. In that situation, the resistance forces had no way to tell Daesh suicide bombers from displaced asylum seekers. The experience of seeing the behavior of Daesh had made the frightened people of the city think that the resistance forces were just like Daesh. Anyway, the city of Bu Kemal was liberated faster than expected, and it was handed over to the Syrian people. Qasem was waiting for the Iraqi popular forces to arrive. Forces were supposed to move from inside Iraq and the city of Qa'im to that point and shake hands with them. Now the Iraqi popular mobilization was standing on its own feet. By cleansing Syria and Iraq from Daesh, American helicopters took the last Daesh remnants and their commanders in the twilight. Qasem was now more than a military commander. He was one of the most effective people in saving two Arab capitals and in creating the most powerful popular forces in the region. Just as he opened the door to the Russians to intervene against the US in the war in Syria, Qasem was now everywhere. A few months before the speech, the head of the CIA had written him a letter of warning that the representative of one of the countries in the region was supposed to hand over to him. But Qasem refused to take the letter. The danger by the symbol of resistance was becoming more and more apparent to the US. He had consciously chosen a path in which both his life or death would be detrimental to his enemies. The symbol of resistance, who relentlessly moved towards crises, was heartened by somewhere else. In the Iranian New Year 1398, or March 2019, when a flood hit Khuzestan province, Qasim was there with his constant companion. Although Qasim had gone there to visit the area and help the flood-stricken people treated him like a guest. Those days, one of Qasim's friends, during a meeting, gave him a suggestion. He said that Qasim had to stand for the next presidential election as a candidate because of his social status and his popularity. It was not the first time that Qasim received this suggestion, but Qasim's answer was clear. I'm a candidate for bullets.
از رودها بپرسید زین راه راز پیوند آن همسفر چرا رفت
The Ocean of Dua
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ilahi wa Sayyidi fa'as'aluka bil qudrati allati qaddartaha wa bil qadiyyati allati hatamtaha wa hakamtaha وغلبت من عليه أجريتها أن تهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة كل جرم أجرمته وكل ذنب أذنبته
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. إلهي وسيدي فأسألك بالقدرة التي قدرتها وبالقضية التي حتمتها وحكمتها
وغلبت من عليه أجريتها أن تهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة كل جرم أجرمته. My Allah and my Master, so I ask you by the power you have apportioned, the decision you have determined and imposed, and through which you have overcome him toward whom it has been put into effect, that you forgive me in this night and at this hour every offense I have committed, every sin I have performed, every wicked thing I have concealed, كل قبيح أسررته وكل جهل عملته, every folly I have enacted, كتمته أو أعلنته, أخفيته أو أظهرته, whether I have hidden it or announced it, whether I have concealed it or manifested it. Now, the question is, why does Imam Ali alayhi salam mention these kinds of sins again when he has already asked the Almighty Allah to be forgiven for in the beginning of the Divine Command supplication, when he said, Allahumma ighfir li adhunuba allati tahtiku al-isam, O Allah, forgive me those sins that tear apart safeguards, adhunuba allati tunzilu al-niqam, those sins that draw down adversities, allati tughayyiru al-ni'am, the sins that alter the blessings, adhunuba allati tahbisu al-du'a, those sins that hold back supplications. Now, why does Imam Ali alayhi salam mention these sins somehow again, specifically the hidden aspects of them, both the hidden sins and apparent ones? كَتَمْتُهُ أَوْ أَعْلَنْتُهُ أَخْفَيْتُهُ أَوْ أَظْهَرْتُهُ The answer is, dear listeners, that Imam Ali alayhi salam in this part is not specifically talking about those sins that have hidden aspects. This is Imam Ali alayhi salam discussing the supplicant's sins and wrongdoings that the supplicant himself, that the servant himself has somehow concealed or hidden it. You may do any kind of wrongdoing, but the ones that you try to hide, the ones that you try to conceal, make yourself somehow proud of yourself that you are doing something without the others knowing it, and this causes you to forgive about the existence of the Almighty Allah, about the Lord of the worlds, about that absolute cause that is the creator of you and all of your behaviors, your actions, and your surroundings. You forget about the blessings. You forget about His forgiveness in the most important level. So that is why Imam Ali alayhi salam knows the importance of asking Almighty Allah's forgiveness for those sins that he himself, I mean the supplicant, has hidden.
I therefore implore you by the power which you determine and by the decree which you have finalized and ordained where you have prevailed. You have imposed it to bestow upon me this night and this very hour the forgiveness for all the transgressions that I have been guilty of, for all the sins that I have committed, for all the ugly acts that I have kept secret, and for all the evils done by me, secretly or openly.
Feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable.
ocean of dua.
One of the other classes of sins that Imam Ali alayhi salam, in the beginning parts of the Kumail supplication, asks Almighty Allah to forgive him for, are the sins that bring about tribulations. Three sins cause descending of tribulations. As we explained, negligence to the pleading of an afflicted, not helping the oppressed, and abandonment of enjoining good and forbidding evil. This last one, enjoining to good and forbidding evil, are two different divine duties. But practicing these two duties is obligatory for anyone who has the necessary conditions. That is, he knows the good, he knows the evil, he does good and avoids evil himself. And abandoning these two duties is a cardinal sin that brings about tribulations. There are two important aspects of religion which throughout history all prophets were appointed to specifically establish. If these two tasks are discarded, the religion would be annihilated and corruption and misguidance would spread everywhere, because it is the people that have to care about each other. من أصبح ولم يهتم بأمور المسلمين فليس بمسلم. The one who spends the night without attempting to solve Muslims' problems is not considered a Muslim. Of course, the material issues are one aspect and the spiritual issues are another aspect. So the true Muslim has to consider the friend's needs, both material and spiritual ones. And then, at the end of all these classifications, Imam Ali, in the beginning parts of the supplication, says, "Allahumma ighfir li kulli dhanbin adnabtu." Now that I have counted to you all these different sins, forgive me every sin I have committed, "wa kulli khati'atin akhta'tuha," and every mistake I have made. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime forces and settlers have killed 159 Palestinians, including at least 30 children, in the West Bank in 2022, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. 2022 has been the deadliest for Palestinian deaths based on the monthly average of deaths, which is the highest since the UN began recording fatalities in 2005. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, an Israeli border police officer shot and killed a Palestinian man at point-blank range in the town of Hawara, near the West Bank city of Nablus, recently. The harrowing incident, captured on video recorded from multiple angles, comes days after Kobi Shabati, the Zionist regime's police chief, praised officers for killing a Palestinian who, they allege, carried out a car ramming attack at a checkpoint. Shabati claimed after Rani Mamoun Fayez Abu Ali, 45, was killed recently, a dead terrorist is what I want to see. Shabati's comments are not the first from a senior officer encouraging field executions of Palestinians. Human rights groups have long accused the Zionist regime's civilian leadership, in words of Bethlehem, of responsibility of transformation of police officers and even armed civilians into judges and executioners who slay Palestinians suspected of armed attacks in the streets. The Palestinian executed in Hawara recently was identified as Ammar Hamdi Nayef Mefleh. Media outlets gave his age as 22 or 23. The fake regime of Israel claimed that the shooting was in response to a stabbing attack, but video appears to show that Mefleh was not holding anything in his hands when he was shot and killed. And as the Tel Aviv-based newspaper Haaretz acknowledged, an eyewitness who was at the scene contradicted the police's version of events, saying that an armed settler who passed by the checkpoint provoked several people who were standing near a restaurant eating lunch when a fight broke out between him and Ammar Mefleh. Video of the moments before the shooting shows two men attempting to pull Mefleh from the grasp of an Israeli regime border police officer before the officer succeeds in breaking away from the men with his arm around Mefleh's neck. The video shows Mefleh breaking away from the officer's grip before he starts hitting the officer and grabbing at his rifle. In quick succession, the rifle drops to the ground, apparently from Mefleh's hands, and Mefleh backs away from the troop, who opens fire at Mefleh with a handgun and then runs over to pick up his rifle. At no time does Mefleh appear to attempt to use the rifle or do anything other than defend himself from the armed Israeli regime officer. Notably, according to the account of a Palestinian eyewitness, Mefleh had already been shot and injured by an Israeli regime settler prior to this struggle with the border police officer who eventually killed him. Four shots can be heard in the video recording of the incidents. One video shows the final shot fired at Mefleh as the officer stands over him, indicating that he intended to confirm the kill. In any case, it is clear that Mefleh did not pose an imminent threat to the officer as he kept shooting at him. Palestinian outlets reported that Israeli regime forces prevented paramedics from providing medical care to Mefleh before taking his body away. The fabricated regime of Israel withholds the bodies of Palestinians killed during attacks, an alleged and attempted attack, so they may be used as bargaining chips in future negotiations. The eyewitness, possibly the same one cited by Haaretz, described to Palestinian media the events leading up to Mefleh's execution. He said that settlers in a car were harassing Mefleh, who tried to open the car door, at which point the settler drew his weapon and shot him and shot at me at my Jeep. Then an Israeli regime officer approached, and instead of getting the settler away, he attacked the young man even more to finish him off, even though he was injured. It is at that point that the Palestinians scuffled with the officer as seen on the video. The officer didn't give him a chance to calm down. May God have mercy on him, the eyewitness said. The officer sprayed him with bullets. He let the settler just go on his way. The eyewitness said that Mefleh never even touched the settler. He just touched his car. The Zionist regime media reported that a Palestinian man attempted to attack an Israeli couple who were in their car near Hawara checkpoint with a knife. Haaretz added the suspect then proceeded to attack a group of border police officers who were in the area, stabbing one of them. The commander of the police force then charged the suspect, who attempted to take his weapon and shot him dead, according to the statement. The Zionist regime's police force attempt to back up this narrative with a series of tweets, including a partially blurred photo of a face with a wound on it, allegedly that one of its officers, and another photo showing what the police claim is the knife used by the attacker. However, the Zionist regime police account contains at least one obvious lie, where it states that the terrorist was neutralized and his death was determined on the spot. Video shows that Mefleh was in fact still alive after he was repeatedly shot by border police officer, and his life might have been saved had the Zionist regime forces not obstructed medical care. The Zionist regime forces routinely deprive injured Palestinians of life-saving medical care, even after they pose no conceivable threat. International law requires that such care be provided promptly, and its willful denial or obstruction may be a war crime. The Zionist regime media stated that the officer who shot Mefleh and a border police officer who was allegedly stabbed were lightly injured. Palestinian media published an image showing the face of the officer who killed Mefleh. Shabati, the Zionist regime police, commanded the actions of the officer, as did Amer Cohen, the commander of the Zionist regime Border Police. Their quick endorsement of Mehfle's killing without even the pretense of an investigation will further reassure the Zionist regime personnel that they can continue to kill Palestinians in almost any circumstances with impunity. According to Wafa News Agency, the Zionist regime army killing of a Palestinian in the Hishe refugee camp in Beit Lah was highlighted on the front page of three Palestinian Arabic dailies published recently. A martyr and several injuries in the Hishe refugee camp, said the headline in Al-Quds Daily. A martyr by occupation army gunfire in the Hishe camp and clashed in confronting a raid of Jenin refugee camp, said Al-Yawm Arabic Daily in its main story headline. The third daily, Al-Hayat Al-Jadida, also said one martyr and six wounded in the Hishe camp and the occupation demolished a mosque in Dora, Al-Khalil area. The three papers printed a statement of condemnation by the Zionist regime prime minister of the Israeli army killing of Omar Yusuf Manal, 23, during a raid of the Hishe camp. And Al-Hayat Al-Jadida had a story about Manal, the baker, the impact of his killing on his family and friends. Al-Hayat Al-Jadida said that the Zionist regime army detained 19 Palestinians recently, issued a demolition order against a building with 9 apartments in Silvan neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, as well as 3 stores in the village of Beit Rima near Ramallah, and raided an elementary school in Ain Yabrut, also near Ramallah. It also said that Fatah Revolutionary Council continues its 10th session at presidential headquarters in Ramallah. Al-Yawm said 6 hours of hearing at magistrate court in Al-Quds exposed collusion between different Israeli bodies against Palestinian landowners in Silvan. It also warned that the powers granted to the fascist Israeli regime lawmaker Itamar Ben-Gvir will have serious repercussions on the life of Palestinians in the West Bank, East Al-Quds, and inside occupied territories, but more dangerous in East Al-Quds if it touches Al-Aqsa Mosque.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.